Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 6th of July, 2021. On the podcast today, Wendy Lawrence, CEO of Totally, discusses the record revenue and EBITDA levels they've achieved during 2020. She also talks about the upcoming year and how they're quite bullish there going forward. Plus, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent, now the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about the trouble with Binance and Bitcoin price action. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content, including an article there, featured articles, Fast Forward from Francesca Innovations, that is, 4D Pharma. There's one there on Microsoft Systems. There's one there. In fact, there's Zach's Traders Cafe. He's looking at a lot of stocks there, of course, on the charts. Totally article. And I can't help but look at our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day, up 6.7%, pretty much, is Omega Diagnostics. It's had a bit of a rough time of late, to 56 pence. Biggest fall of the day, no idea why, Open Orphan, down 7.8%, 26.75 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Wendy Lawrence, Chief Executive Officer of Totally. TLY is the ticker there. Wendy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've announced your preliminary results for the 12-month period ended 31st of March 2021, record revenue and EBITDA, and we'll get into that and the outlook and how it's going, because, of course, we're quite a few months on from that now. Wendy, for people not familiar, just give us a brief overview as to what the business is all about, please, if you could.
Okay, thank you. So, Totally is a frontline healthcare delivery business. We have stood shoulder to shoulder with the NHS and other healthcare providers across the UK 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and worked through the pandemic. And basically, we're there as a partner for healthcare organisations, making sure that people can access the most appropriate healthcare quickly and efficiently. So it's been very busy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'll ever see a time in our lives like we've seen over that last 12 months, this period you've gone through just now. So, of course, that encapsulated the entire pandemic, the worst of it. Hopefully, we're coming out the back of it now. But, so take us through, if you could, we'll start off with some operational highlights. So take us through some operational highlights, if you could, Wendy, first. Then we'll look at financial and then the outlook, if possible.
Okay. So, yes, you're right. We've all lived through quite a year, haven't we? We work in three different divisions. So, They have been impacted quite differently. But our biggest division, which is about 95% of our revenue, is our urgent care division. We provide 111 services. So if you remember right at the beginning of the pandemic, the government asked that anybody that needed to access healthcare did so via 111, either the telephone service or the online service. And that was to try and protect the front door of the hospitals and to make sure people weren't walking in and trying to manage the disease as we learned how to manage it. So we, NHS 111 demand increased beyond all of our expectations. Some of that continues today. And what we see is ups and downs depending on the variants that we're actually seeing of coronavirus at the moment. And obviously that varies via the geographical area. So it certainly hasn't gone away, but it's not at the high point that it was during the pandemic. Our planned care services, planned obviously as the name says on the tin, but what that division does is it's a provider of outpatient services and physiotherapy. And of course, when hospitals had to close to elective care in order to protect their capacity to treat people with coronavirus, that division was impacted. And so we were no longer able to provide the vast majority of those services. We still tried to do our best using video consultations and online technology and our physio app. But it's fair to say that the majority of those services had to pause whilst we weren't able to treat elective care. So they're back up and working now. They started again in December and we're back up to pre-pandemic levels. And of course, all the patients that couldn't be seen during the period sit on waiting lists. So we are now working at probably about 10% above what we saw pre-pandemic in terms of referrals and back and working. So we expect that division to recover. Last but by no means least is our insourcing division. And this is Totally Healthcare, where we go in and help hospitals reduce their waiting lists. And there's been a lot of publicity about that. Again, during the pandemic, elective care stops, waiting lists grow. NHS England have actually said that, you know, they have a record number of over 5 million patients sitting on waiting lists waiting to be treated. That's just England itself, and Totally Healthcare work across the UK and Ireland. And so, again, the division had to stop services for a period of time, but they were able to start services again in Northern Ireland back at the end of June 2020. And then gradually, as elective care started again, they're working now across England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And obviously the demand for those services is high as hospitals have been asked to quickly reduce those waiting lists and get people seen. So operationally, they were all very different, all facing their own challenges. But I believe, and I'm very proud of the way that the staff responded to that, and again, stood shoulder to shoulder with us going through the whole pandemic. And as we come out the other end, are now looking at, you know, the new business as normal for us, because it's very, very clear that, you know, we all need to learn to live with COVID-19. Now it's not going to completely disappear. Not quite sure what that means, but our business model will very much mean that we still have to work with new patient care delivery models, making sure that our staff are protected, you know, the use of personal protective equipment, making sure that deep clean regimes are in place. So it's a new normal for us, but couldn't be prouder of the staff during the period, and obviously very pleased with the results.
Yeah, well, and you say new normal, but I suppose that's a busy new normal for you, isn't it? Because, like I said, there's record-breaking waiting lists for the NHS, and so you'll be kept busy, won't you?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, during the period as well, we've also moved from the traditional 111 service and implemented the new government initiative on Think 111 First. Mm. And it's all building on what happened during the pandemic and asking people to contact NHS Think 111 First on the telephone to book an appointment and to be assessed as to what is the most appropriate place for you to go. So, you know, even A&E attendances, unless it's immediate and life-threatening, people are being asked to use Think 111 First. And that, for us, means that we are receiving more of the normal calls as well as the the calls where people believe that, you know, they may be impacted by COVID. And of course, the other side of it, Justin, is as we all start going back to work, going back to university and going out more, because we've been in isolation for a year, our immune systems are a little bit compromised. So lots more people are picking up normal diseases, you know, not COVID, but are so worried that it is coronavirus, they are seeking assistance. Yeah. And so we're getting a lot of people coming through with, you know, colds and flu-like symptoms, as well as you know, your tummy upsets and gastrointestinal issues. And so we remain busy, and NHS Think 111 First is certainly going to keep us busy. So, yeah, with the demand, with the waiting list backlog, we're not going to get bored anytime soon.
No, exactly. Okay, well, let's touch on some financial highlights. Some records being broken there.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, you will know that we removed guidance from the market at the beginning of the pandemic because no one knew where this was going to take us. But we've seen a 7.4% increase in revenue. A lot of that was generated from our urgent care division, as I've already stated. A 24.5% increase in EBITDA. No exceptionals in this year. It's a very clean set of results. And cash increased by nearly 66% up to 14.8 million. And I think the most important bit to know of that is all of our cash. We have no deferred payments. We, you know, we did take advantage in year of deferring HMRC payments. We didn't know where things were going, but we settled all of those before the year end. And so that is our cash. We continue to pay dividend. We paid it throughout the period, and again we are looking to continue to do so. So for us, we couldn't be more pleased with where we are, and I think it's a solid, robust demonstration of the organisation that Totally now is.
Yeah, and like I said, some people may be saying, "Oh, well, that increase is because you're so busy to the COVID." But looking forward, are you quite confident you can improve the top line growth and your EBITDA?
Yes, absolutely. So, what we also saw as well was the government published its new white paper on health and social care, which was all about reducing bureaucracy around tenders and, you know, using trusted partners to actually deliver services that were required by health and social care. So there's two bits in that for us. I believe because we are known now as a key partner, a responsible partner, and delivering good quality. You know, all of our registered services with the Care Quality Commission are rated as good. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. You know, I'm very proud of that. And the fact that we have been able to respond to the different requests for assistance during the period and deliver those in a resilient model that's there for the future if needed. And a lot of the services that we started during the pandemic, we believe will remain. We think that puts us in a very good position. And of course, waiting lists at a record high. And so as Totally Healthcare grow, they will contribute more to the overall business. And that's the highest margin part of our business as well. So we have confidence in our model. And we have also today reintroduced guidance to the market. So our brokers will be putting forward those forecasts.
Yeah, well, no, do you know what? I'm just looking at now. Canaccord, they've got a price target at 60 pence, which right now your price is 40 pence. That's 50% upside. That's not to be sniffed at. So that's impressive there. Excellent stuff. Okay, Wendy, well, as always, if you could, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing here, but not yet following the story, three quick reasons, if you could, why someone should hit that button on your page on Vox and add Totally to their watch list, please.
Well, we believe we are pretty unique in terms of what we do. I think our delivery model has demonstrated to itself that we are resilient, we are a key partner, we are there to help the NHS manage the demand to mean that the NHS and hospitals can focus on delivering what only they can do. We're reliable, we're responsive, and from investors, I don't think there'll be many businesses out there that will put out a clean, healthy, positive set of results as Totally have done today. And the, you know, the outlook for us is very much of the same.
Excellent stuff. Wendy, good to chat to you, and hopefully we catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's Glenn Goodman. Glenn, he's a dirty trader. Yeah, he's the author of The Crypto Trader, How to Trade Like a Dirty Dog.
No, that's not what it says, is it?
Oh, isn't
on
it?
The title.
What does it say? Oh, hang on, let's see what it actually says.
You still got it there.
The Crypto Trader, How Anyone Can Make Money Trading Bitcoin and Other Cryptocurrencies. Glenn Goodman.
He's got the past year or so.
He's got no body, just head and shoulders there.
That's yeah, a disembodied head. Just to inspire people.
Yeah, okay. And, right,
still
so Glenn,
using it as a coaster.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So listen, Glenda, what did... I tell you what's been happening a lot. Binance is coming for a lot of flack, isn't it, from all different sides?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Just to explain, Binance is the biggest exchange in the world.
Cryptocurrency exchange. Still is. Biggest cryptocurrency exchange in the world.
By what? What are you talking about?
For years and years.
Hang on a second. You say biggest.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Users or what is that?
Users and amount of
money
stuff transacted per day. By a very long way, it was the biggest. Let me check the latest figures, tappity-tap, to see if it's still by far the biggest. This is worth checking, isn't it, seeing as we're talking about... Yeah, it's... Oh, my Lord, it's so much bigger than everything else.
How do you tell? What are you looking at?
I'm looking at the total volume traded, the volume of cryptocurrency traded, like the sheer amount of it per day. And just in spot... cryptocurrency, which means buying and selling the ordinary cryptocurrencies, which the FCA has clarified you're still allowed to do on Binance. They gave some quotes to a journalist about this. And so, you know, all this furore over the past week or two about
what
how
you
the
all
FCA
this what?
Has... Ferrari? It's still early for me. Where were we?
Ferrari.
Binance, yes. The thing, you know, all the fuss over the past couple of weeks, yeah, right, has been about how the UK's FCA, Financial Conduct Authority, has banned Binance. Now, as I clarified last week, they haven't actually banned Binance, okay? Yeah. All they've done is clarify their previous position, which is that leveraged trading of cryptocurrencies is banned within the UK. So they're saying, Binance, you're not allowed to advertise your leverage trading over here or in any way sort of make it clear to people that it's available to them here in the UK. So they sort of fired a warning shot across the bows. But the thing is that most of Binance, most of the big business for most trading platforms is in spot trading, which is basically just buying and selling cryptocurrencies in the normal way, not leveraged, not margined, just buying and selling cryptos. That is still fine to do through Binance, according to the FCA. Looking at the latest volumes, because I was going to say how big it is, Binance's spot volume for the past 24 hours is $16 billion. That's the amount of crypto that was bought and sold through Binance over the past 24 hours, $16 billion. The next biggest is a platform most of you won't even have heard of, Huobi, which is a Far Eastern platform with only $3.7 billion of business in the past 24 hours.
So how much has Binance got, you said? $3.7 billion is there for Wasabi,
yeah,
whatever it's called.
Binance is $16 billion in the past 24 hours. Coinbase, the one everyone's heard of, $1.8
billion. Okay.
So Binance is almost 10 times bigger in spot volume than Coinbase. And what's more, Binance does enormous derivatives business, which of course the British consumers aren't supposed to join in. That's the leveraged trading. They do $60 billion a day of that. And Coinbase isn't even on the charts when it comes to that kind of thing. So you're getting the idea. Binance is the biggest by miles. So it matters a lot. And it's been getting all kinds of trouble because And you know, I was keen to point this out again and again in my book, that you can't trust Binance, just like you can't really trust any exchange. But Coinbase, at least, is based in the US. Kraken is based in the US. They're both regulated as money exchange services, though not as proper sort of stock exchange type entities. So they're sort of semi-regulated. Binance, meanwhile, is just not regulated at all. In fact, it refuses to even declare what country it's based in. It says it has no proper headquarters. It used to say it was based in Malta. Malta then denied that. So, you know, who the hell are Binance? Where the hell are Binance? Who knows? So when people keep writing to me over the past week or so saying it's really unfair that the Binance is being targeted like this. And one guy said, pointed out quite rightly, that Barclays has now seemingly stopped all transactions of money. So if you wanted to use your debit or credit card, your Barclays debit or credit card, to put money into your Binance account, you would probably not be able to right now. Barclays obviously playing it particularly safe here because the FCA has got problems with Binance. But here's the thing. I've never trusted Binance enough to actually use a debit or credit card or even transfer from my bank account anyway. I explain the laborious process that I go through in my book. Well, it's a bit laborious.
Can you summarize it?
I put money into Coinbase. I use Coinbase as my money transfer service because it is regulated as a money transfer service in the United States. So as far as money transfer goes, I trust it to some degree. So I will use my credit card or debit card or a direct bank transfer to my Coinbase account. And then once my pounds are in my Coinbase account, I buy a cryptocurrency. Doesn't particularly matter which. Really, I tend to use ones with low transfer fees and low transaction fees, that kind of thing. So I might use Litecoin, for example. I'll just buy a ton of Litecoin with all my pounds in the Coinbase account. Then I transfer the Litecoin directly from my Coinbase account into my Binance account. And once it's in there, I can then turn those Litecoins back into dollar equivalents like Tethers or into Bitcoin or into pretty much anything I want to. I can use it for trading. But that's the process that I've always gone through, and I still do, because I don't trust Binance with my credit card. Frankly, I don't know who they are. Yeah. Nor does they might be a massive business, but nobody actually knows properly who they are and where they're based.
What's clever is they've taken the word finance and put a B in front of it and replaced the F with a B, because Bitcoin, Binance, that's very clever, that.
Yeah, my brother-in-law
that's convinced a lot of
people. The mickey out of that this weekend. Yes. When I met up with family, he was saying Binance. That's like saying, that's like when people take hungry and angry and call it I'm hangry, that kind of thing. It is. It's just, it's a bit of a lazy title. But I guess it kind of says what it's
very clear. No, simplicity. People know what it is. Inance, we say something to do with finance. Binance, Bitcoin. I can buy Bitcoin. Oh, it makes a lot of sense there.
Bitcoin and Binance.
Whereas Kraken, what is that about?
It's like, yeah, they always say, what is it when you click on the Kraken? When you're on the Kraken website and you want to go into the trading, and then you go into their trading platform, you click on their trading platform and they have a little message that comes up saying, release the Kraken.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I saw that film.
What does that mean?
Clash of the Titans.
To do with trading.
No, Clash of the Titans was on the weekend, actually. It came on and just I saw the Kraken, very old animated version of a sea monster coming out of the sea, you know. So yes,
it's the original Clash of the Titans, not the remake from
years ago. I don't know what it was. I wasn't paying attention. I switched it off after 10 minutes. But yeah, okay. So you said you had plenty of stories about crypto. Have we covered any of them yet?
You had enough of that story.
Yeah, or was that one of them? Was it?
Well, I didn't say much about Barclays. Let me just say a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. What Barclays has done. Give me a second. Oh, yes. So it was actually only yesterday that Barclays informed its UK customers that it's blocked payments to Binance until further notice, telling customers that this was done to help you keep your money safe. I mean, this is one of those, isn't it? It's like some people argue and have argued for a long time that we're turning into a bit of a nanny state society. And particularly since the pandemic, obviously, we've all got very used to doing what we're told all the time. When it comes to finance, the Financial Conduct Authority does seem to see it as its job, it often feels, to prevent adults from doing things that might be bad for them. And we talked here on the podcast last week about about how gambling companies are allowed to sort of pretty much do what they like. Maybe we didn't talk about it. Maybe I was talking to a friend and I'm getting confused. But anyway, point is, you know, when it comes to gambling, there are restrictions, but not many. And we can do quite a lot of what
it's
we like.
It's getting tighter, though, isn't it? They're tightening it up. Because they realise that people are idiots. Well, not everyone, but I mean, there's a small group of people have problems with gambling and they need to be protected from themselves. Otherwise, what happens is, not just them, if it was them that was the problem, fine. But they start stealing off other people and their family themselves and bring the whole family down in misery, depression and debt. So I prefer the FCA to step in and say, for the idiots out there who can't control themselves, we're going to have to put these regulations in.
Because a minority of people are idiots. Everyone else in society aren't allowed to, to use adult discretion.
Yes, because most idiots won't spend all day chucking money into a fixed odds paying machine. They go and have a little dabble of it now and again if they want to. I wouldn't even bother with those machines myself. But that's the problem. The people stand there think they're going to win sort of a grand on a fixed odds machine and they chuck about £2,000 into it, and which they haven't got.
It makes sense to put financial limits on them, I agree. But
isn't Barclays just doing this? Isn't Barclays just doing this because they may get some splashback, some people claiming from them that say, oh, you've balances nicked my money and you allowed it to me transfer money there. So isn't it just cutting down on the flack they will get? Really?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't make much sense, though, because Binance isn't an out-and-out scam, is it? It's a legitimate business. It's a business that has been in operation for several years and it is an enormous business as well. One of the biggest financial businesses, in the world. That's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but it's pretty large, as you can see from the figures of business they do every day.
So Binance said
$60 billion in derivatives business plus that's $76 billion of business per day they're transacting on Binance. That's a pretty big business by anybody's standards.
Have they said anything about
Binance? For Barclays to say, we won't let you transfer any of your money in there, it's like as if they're just saying this is a scam and you're transferring your money to a scammer, which is surely not the case.
Yeah, but I have a bit of Binance, sort of recognised any of these people coming forward saying denounce Binance. Are they defending their position in any way or not?
Binance, well, they've made kind of mealy-mouthed statements over the past couple of weeks about the whole business. I haven't got the statement in front of me, but it wasn't very interesting. It was one of those sort of boilerplate statements. Barclays, meanwhile, are saying this action does not impact on the ability for customers to withdraw funds from Binance. So you can still take your money out using Barclays, you just can't put it in. The decision has been taken following the FCA warning to consumers to help keep our customers' money safe. I find it odd because, I mean, apart from anything else, you are able to still use spread betting companies in the UK, use leverage to trade cryptocurrencies, but you can still use leverage to trade everything else. I use the spread betting and CFD companies in this UK, to trade stocks and shares, to trade commodities, to trade currencies, sometimes very volatile currencies like the Turkish lira, for example. And it begs the question, if I'm allowed to use leverage and everyone's allowed to use, well, not everyone, but, you know, sort of experienced investors are allowed to use leverage to do that kind of thing, then why on earth would Barclays need to stop people from doing that with cryptocurrencies? Are they that much more dangerous?
Yeah, they just want to be seen to be responsible, jumping on the bandwagon, you know, that kind of stuff, you know.
That stuff. Yeah, all right. Well,
what's the knock-on effect? Is there any knock-on effect? I mean, apart from, you know, the Bitcoin price not really going anywhere again, is, just trading in a range?
Still in the trading range. Sitting on my hands.
Yeah, is it is it has any knock-on effect to this? I mean, we've got all the miners in China. I mean, the crypto miners, not proper miners. Where are they going? China miner.
Anyway, Chinese miners are no longer in China. Yeah, or they've been shut down.
I've heard they're going to America.
About this in previous weeks, but they China's been shutting down a lot of its miners, its Bitcoin miners and cryptocurrency miners. Mining capacity. Well, here's the beauty of Bitcoin. The beauty of the Bitcoin algorithm is that it doesn't have that much of an impact because it doesn't necessarily impact price at all. When there are fewer miners, all it means is it's more difficult. It's easier. Yeah. Rather to make money from mining, so it opens up an opportunity for other miners to step into the business, perhaps ones that had shut up shop temporarily. This is the way that Bitcoin mining works. It's a free market, so when the difficulty of mining increases, some miners find it's no longer cost effective to mine anymore because it uses, as we know, a lot of electricity to do mining. And if their electricity costs are too high, then they just shut up. They just shut their machines off and that's it. And then you get what's called a difficulty adjustment. And we've just had one of these in Bitcoin. The system is automatically calibrated so that if there aren't that many miners anymore, there aren't that many machines competing to create new bitcoins, then the difficulty level goes down in sort of step increments. And we've just had a difficulty level adjustment now because of the decrease in miners, all the miners being shut down in China. And because the difficulty goes down, that makes it much easier to make money from mining Bitcoin. And so new miners are starting up their machines in countries all over the world. So the system automatically regulates itself. It's a beautiful thing, Justin, a beautiful thing.
What a new mine.
Because I don't have... have my own warehouse with an enormous number of extremely expensive computers in it.
But why didn't you do something else?
I would mine.
Yeah, but why didn't you do one of the other ones, like, you know, proof of stake and all that stuff, you know, like Ethereum or Cardano or whatever? Why didn't you do that? Stake some. Do you stake some? Do you stake any?
Do I stake some? I've done staking in the past, but you have to have lots of cryptocurrency to do staking. And currently, I sold Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies at about $55,000 ish. That was the Bitcoin price at the time. Now we're down to about 34. So I've sold out of my stuff and I'm sitting on my hands. But certainly, if I start opening up big positions again, and I intend to hold those positions for some time.
How big is your big position, Glenn?
It would definitely make sense.
Tell me about your big position.
I don't know; they're not that big. But you know, if I open any positions, big or otherwise,
positions now.
And I intend to hold those positions for some time. Then yeah, I may take part in staking once again. For those who don't know, staking is a beautiful thing. It's the DeFi industry that you may have heard me make reference to a few times on the podcast, whereby borrowing and lending goes on using algorithms. And so basically, if you've got a bunch of cryptocurrency and you intend to hold it for a while, probably, then you can stake it by basically handing over the cryptocurrency to an algorithm and getting an interest rate back, because it's kind of like an informal banking system. So you're lending out your money, you're lending out your cryptocurrency, and you're getting interest back. Obviously, risks come with that. So far, the risks have been mainly theoretical, mainly hypothetical, because these DeFi systems, they vary in quality, but some of them, the most famous ones and successful ones, tend to have quite safe algorithms whereby they expect people who borrow cryptocurrency to lay down collateral. And what they do is over collateralize, which means that they actually have to lay down more collateral than their loan is worth in order to be lent money or cryptocurrency. And that provides a margin of safety in the system, which is why even when the price of Bitcoin fell from, 60 odd thousand down to 30,000 recently, it didn't crash the system and millions of people didn't lose the money that they'd lent out. So far, fingers crossed, it's been working quite well. But as I say, if you're going to get a big interest rate, that always comes with risk. And DeFi is no different in that regard.
I've been trying to be positive here. I'm looking at the bit while you were talking there. Obviously, wasn't listening, but I was looking at the Bitcoin price and looking at all indicators here, trying to find a positive indicator. But as yet, it's annoying. It's just neutral, really. It's just going. I mean, you know, I've got some tram lines on the RSI, and they haven't broke above. You know, it's been, like I said, grinding lower, a series of lower highs, still happening now. In fact, recently. Maybe coming back towards, maybe consolidating nicely here. I mean,
if you look at it on, say, a 4-hourly chart or a daily chart, it looks like since the middle of May, so that's where a month and a half, Bitcoin was sort of trending in a downwards direction. And then arguably over the last week or two, it started going sideways, hasn't it? So you could maybe that's the beginning of a change of trend.
One of the biggest mistakes people do is try and preempt the start of a trend.
Yes, I absolutely agree with
that. When you sit there for ages waiting for a trend to start, oh, come on, I'll get in earlier. If I get in at 35 rather than 40, then I can make even more money when it goes higher. But you realise, hang on, the trend I'm starting to, so it could go back down to 30. Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly, which is why I've barely tweeted recently, because about a week ago I tweeted that. I tweeted a tweet where I wrote, hooray, we've now got really clear resistance and support lines for Bitcoin. And I drew them, two nice horizontal lines, the resistance at about 41,500, 42,000, support around about 28,500 to 29,000. Yeah. And, you know, those are really nice lines in the sand we've got. And the price just keeps oscillating between those two lines, and arguably has been doing since the beginning of this year. It went between those two lines and then it popped up, had its bit where it got to 60,000, 65,000, and then popped back down. And now it's back between those same two parallel lines again. So, as long as the price remains within those two lines, then there are opportunities for very short-term traders, day traders, to buy and sell within those lines. I'm not interested in that, because, as you know, I'm not a dirty trader. A dirty trader.
Filthy.
I'm waiting. I'm just waiting for price to go on either side of those lines.
What are you waiting for? Price to go above 40, exactly 40, 41, I'm saying, 41 to be sure.
Yeah, well, at least looking at the lines, I think it would need to go at least above 41.5 to pique my interest, maybe even above 42.5 to be on the safe side, to go, oh yeah, this is definitely breaking out.
Let me ask you a question then. Do you believe, Bitcoin has a future?
Oh, Lord, what a question. What a big question that I spend so much of my life thinking about.
Well, keep the answer short. Your answer's drag on. Just say yes or no. Do you think it has a future?
Does it have a future? It has such a strong brand name now that I'm tempted to think that this digital gold narrative will stick to some degree, and that as money continues to be printed.
I don't need longer explanation than that.
I want to go on.
Hold on.
I just got to say the quick downside, regulation. God. I agree with UBS. Actually, that brings me to another story.
No, stop a second. Don't go on. No. Stop. We'll do that in a bit.
All right.
So, if you believe it has a future, why not invest in it?
Because I just said I don't necessarily. I can see the upside and the downside.
God, Glenn, your backside must be hurting sitting on that fence.
I'm on the fence on that one.
No, you are. I think you enjoy it on the fence.
I'll tell you what UBS
said. I like the fence.
UBS warns, steer clear of cryptocurrencies. Regulators will crack down on crypto. And to some degree, I agree with their negativity there. I think maybe they're, saying steer clear from cryptocurrencies. I disagree with that part of it, but I certainly agree with the part where they say regulators will crack down on crypto. Those are the feelings, those are the little signs that we're getting from the US, from Europe, even from Britain. The feeling now is that we're in a regulatory era. This stuff is going to start being treated more seriously and regulated. regulated. Now, the crypto industry has always said, we welcome regulation. You know, they want to kind of, well, a lot of the crypto industry anyway, wants to be part of the fold. But, of course, that
Binance
will
don't.
Reduce possible profits. Binance clearly not that keen, yeah. But, well, they say we comply with all relevant regulations, blah,
relevant.
Blah, blah.
Yeah, they've added that in, relevant. Someone comes up with a regulation that affects them adversely and says, that's not relevant.
Well, anyway, point is, UBS are right. Well, no, UBS are not right because UBS are saying steer clear of cryptocurrencies. I don't agree with that. I do agree that regulation is on the way, but regulation doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. But, you know, a lot of the
is there anything in life you're convinced on?
What's that?
Is there anything you're convinced on? Or is it?
Why would I be convinced on anything? I don't know the future. Do you know what the US regulators are going to do? Do you know whether the regulators are going to ban Bitcoin or be nice to Bitcoin?
To a certain degree,
just maybe
I agree.
Just bring in a few little token adjustments to Bitcoin. You don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what the regulators will do. Therefore, there is no certainty. Therefore, there is uncertainty. So I trade in a situation of permanent uncertainty. And that's the only way that anybody can sensibly trade. It's ridiculous to have conviction about anything. Yeah. Why would anybody have conviction about anything?
No, listen, to a certain degree, I agree.
Oh, just everybody, just what?
No, I agree with you to a certain degree.
I
disagree
about any of your long-term holds, for example.
All of them.
Well, that's ridiculous because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the companies will do. You don't know if there'll be another pandemic. You don't know if new regulations would destroy your company or competitors will enter the industry that your companies are in and destroy their business. You don't know anything. So how can you have conviction? All you can do is have a kind of a probability in your head of the chance of them doing well in the future. And then you can act upon that probability by buying the thing, holding it for a while, but keeping a very close eye in case things start to go awry.
I agree to a certain degree.
That's not conviction.
No, I agree with you to a certain degree. I don't agree with what you're saying, though, to another degree.
Right.
I don't wholly agree with you, but I do to a certain degree, Lynn.
Okay. To which degree?
I don't know. I've lost track. Which bit should I be agreeing on to a certain
degree?
It's
too early for you to be drinking. I don't know. Is this like some kind of... This? I don't think this is alcohol-induced. I think this is sleep deprivation-induced. It's just get up at like 3 in the morning, isn't it? You're like... You're losing it.
Oh, there you go. Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you think... Yeah. Bitcoin will go beyond its previous high of 65,000. Well, it's hard to say. What I would say is this. If it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
I'll trade the trend. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. Exactly. It's like, that's called a win-win situation. Yeah. That's how you make money trading. It's like, or investing for that matter. You just hop on when things are looking good. But you keep your eyes open and you be realistic. And if things are no longer going according to the plan that you had in your head, then you need to ask yourself some very serious questions and probably get out.
Yes.
It's the same goes for what I do and for what you do, really.
Okay.
You just got to keep your eyes open. See what's real and not live on what they call hopium in the crypto community. Okay. People living on hopium, always hoping that what they want to come true is coming true. But it isn't necessarily, you see.
Right. Anything else worth saying? Any other stories you had that would interest anyone listening? Or they've probably switched off by now, but...
Probably.
Anything else?
Yeah, there's the mystery of the Bitcoin billionaire who drowned. Did you hear about that one?
Did he tell me that?
Huh?
Did he tell me about that one? No, tell me. Go on. What happened?
Mircea Popescu, a very early Bitcoin investor, completely mad, often not popular because he had a tendency to write racist, sexist, and fascist things. So not the most popular.
Well, he'd be popular with certain sectors of society, I suppose. But
I guess so. He had his cult following. Mm. But anyway, he's died at the age of 41. He looked a fair bit older, I have to say. But anyway, so he died at the age of 41, drowned in mysterious circumstances. And he has more than $1 billion worth, £1.4 billion, or $2 billion, of Bitcoin. So the question is, what happens to his fortune now? And as ever, the problem with Bitcoin, of course, is if you don't hold the private keys to get into the private wallet, then that's it. It's lost forever. So we're still not sure what's going to happen to his Bitcoin. Did he leave the keys in the safe custody of friend or family, if he had such a thing? We don't know. If he didn't, then that Bitcoin is gone forever. Mircea Popescu. There's also a big question over what happens to...
What's his first name?
Mircea. M-I-R-C-E-A.
M-I-R-C-E-A.
Is that Mircea Romanian, I think?
Popescu.
I think. Oh, and also John McAfee, you know, who also died in mysterious circumstances in prison. You know, I mean, he was such a character and a huge kind of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency pusher, I suppose some people might call him, because he was in trouble with the US authorities for sort of pumping certain coins and that kind of thing. Anyway, so he's died in prison, supposedly committed suicide, but, you know, it's another kind of situation like Epstein, where people aren't quite convinced, especially as he's put warnings beforehand. Did you see McAfee's warnings
yeah.
over recent months, saying, if I suddenly am found to have killed myself, then don't believe it. It's all lies. Well, he has. So maybe we should listen to him and decide that it is all lies. Who knows? But anyway, point is, he had a bunch of crypto as well. And where are the keys for that? Has he left them with anyone else? We don't know. So this is one of the problems with cryptocurrency in general, particularly with Bitcoin, is that if you don't leave the keys with somebody else for safekeeping and then you die, then that money's gone forever. Nobody can find it. Nobody can ever recover it.
Okay, all right. Well, there we are. That's gone then. So what does that mean?
It's gone.
Okay, good.
Well, not really. It just means there's less Bitcoin in the world, I suppose, which theoretically means that the price should go up in the longer term because there is more scarce.
So you are bullish on the future of Bitcoin, aren't you?
No, I am on the fence.
Right,
I'm on the fence about Bitcoin now. As you know, to clarify,
that's fine. That's fine. We know. We've been doing a long answer again.
Cryptocurrency in general, for the very long term, I think the cryptocurrency industry will go from strength to strength. Bitcoin itself, I'm not so convinced about, because it's too primitive in its technology. It doesn't have enough use cases, as far as I'm concerned. It has too many problems with slowness, with expensiveness, various other problems. It could be regulated out of existence. But the cryptocurrency industry in general will go from strength to strength, and there are lots of cryptos that will succeed hugely in the future, I'm sure. Thank you and good night.
Good night. Speak next week, Glenn. That's it from Glenn. He's grazed with Bitcoin to a certain degree, not wholly, but degree. Thank you, Glenn.
Degrees of agreement.
Lovely. Yeah. Bye bye.
Bye then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Bellascura, down 3.7% to 59.5. At four, Mobile Streams, up 1.8% to 0.28. At three, Michelmersh Brick Holdings, down 0.7% to 142. At one, Helium One, up 1.48% to 27.4. And at one, Truefin, non-mover, stock I hold. It's at 80 pence right there. Okay, it's time for top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Fragrant Prosperity, update on IntelliDeck acquisition. At four, Ridgecrest, proposed RTO of Blue Air and suspension of trading. At three, 4D Pharma, publication of LBP improves activity of CART-T. At two, Argo Blockchain, June operational update and strategic update. And at one, it's SupplyAtMe Capital, completion of acquisition and board restructuring. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciato.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.